live from the CG Technology Studio.
Oh, my goodness!
In the entertainment capital of the world.
Bring your lunch!
It's the T.C. Martin Show.
With a flex of the muscles.
Diagnosis.
Look at that. Oh, my goodness!
Prognosis.
So he does a lot of things out on the floor, including dunk.
Osmosis.
Wow, he could really bounce off the floor.
It's the doctor. Martin.
Oh, the put back by Walker.
Here it comes.
The doctor is now in.
And a very good Friday afternoon to you, live from the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. No better place to be on a Friday or any day for that matter. The Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, the CG Technology Sportsbook. Here we go as we get ready for the Belmont Stakes tomorrow. Will we see a Triple Crown winner again for the, second time in the last
five years?
Four years. Exactly. 2015, I believe, right? There we go. All right, we'll be talking that with you. Golden Knights, the season officially over. We will get thoughts on that as we break down the season that was fantastic. Possibly the season that could have been for many people out there. Depends on how you look at it. The glass half full, half empty. There you have it. And, of course, we've got NBA Finals game number 4 tonight. They'll tip it off at 6 o'clock. The Golden State Warriors in Cleveland to bid adieu to the Cavaliers. Will it all be over tonight after the Warriors take on the Cavaliers? T.C. Martin, live from the Cosmopolitan. Brian Benowitz, our gracious host, our handicapper extraordinaire when it comes to the ponies, hockey guru, college basketball aficionado, and maitre d' of sorts. You're the man.
You're building me up a little bigger than I am.
That's good. And Marco D'Angelo from Wager Talk, our resident horse racing guru. I can hardly wait to hear where the money's going with Marco, because if we follow the money with Marco, we're usually pretty wise.
Marco's spot on. He's hit these big races real nice over the last couple of years, and so your listeners should be at the edge of their seat waiting for his selections here today.
I know when we did our Kentucky Derby preview and our Preakness preview, you had pencil and paper writing every one of his selections down. You need like two pieces of paper because he had so many exotics going.
As I pointed out on our Derby, if I would have listened to Marco, I'd probably be retired now after the, I was looking at Lee in the Derby last year. It cost me as I ran first, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and lost money, which was hard to do in that race.
Exactly.
But Marco had looking at Lee, was very confident that the rail would open up that day, and it did, and he had a great score.
Marco, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Anytime, TC. Love talking horses. You know that.
All right. It's horses and everything else, and we are going to start with the Vegas Golden Knights. The Stanley Cup Finals concluded here at T-Mobile Arena last night, where the Washington Capitals won the series 4-1, the first championship in 43 years of existence for the Capitals. And how did the Capitals do it? We're going to diagnose that and break that down for you today, too. And if you'd like to chime in as well, too, you can feel free to join us and give your thoughts on what transpired last night. Give us your thoughts on the season overall at 876-1340, the phone number. Again, 876-1340. Our callers have been fantastic during the last few weeks talking about the Stanley Cup Finals. Was it good enough for you that the Vegas Golden Knights got this far? Or are you a little bit disappointed? I know that, you know, we were in the building last night, Brian, and there were some fans that were disappointed. There were some fans that were in tears. But overall, when you look at it, and we've talked about this time and time again, really, you have to view this as bonus hockey. No one expected the Golden Knights to make this kind of a run. They win the Pacific Division. They roll through the LA Kings. They sweep the LA Kings. Destroy the San Jose Sharks. Your Winnipeg Jets. Wow, that did not have home ice advantage, but they took care of the Jets, and lo and behold, they're playing for the Cup. And they went 5, they lost to the Capitals, but we'll talk all about that. But overall, just a fantastic season. And I know you've been to every game. You follow this closer than anybody. What was your overall take when it ended last night?
Well, you just didn't want it to end. I think that was the most disappointing thing. It's been such an incredible journey. From the preseason to the draft, from the draft to the preseason to the horrible events that happened on 10-1, to what they've meant to the city and what they've meant to this town, and to everybody in the community, and to see them play so well and to really far surpass everybody's expectations, overachieve, win throughout the playoffs. You just didn't want it to end. It was natural to be disappointed because you just fell in love with the team. I'd say thanks to the whole organization from top to bottom, what they've meant to this town over the last, 8 months now, has been remarkable. And I'm now penciling to see when camp starts. Be ready in August to go watch them at City National again, because it really was incredible. And it didn't end up with the cup, but I think if there's just about anybody that knows anything about hockey and about sports, if they would have said in August, hey, you're going to be playing for the cup in a few months, it would have been almost laughable.
Right.
And the guys believed in themselves, and they believed in Gerard Gallant and the system. And this place went hockey mad. The town went hockey mad, and it was great to see, and it was a great ride. And, yeah, I was disappointed. I was a little sad. But at the end of the day, I was very proud that this was a team that was representing our community. And they did it so well, and I think they're going to continue to do it well. And I think they've just started something because this team's going to be hungry for next year.
Marco, you've been around this town a long time. Talk a little bit about what the Vegas Golden Knights have meant in your eyes.
Well, you know, coming from Pittsburgh, I've been here for 10 years. So I came from Pittsburgh. I was spoiled when I grew up. I mean, I had the 70s of the Steelers. I just thought you're supposed to have Super Bowl trophies every year. We had the Pirates, that was the last time they were good. We're back in the 70s. But then I had the Pittsburgh Penguins and all of the great players through the history of that team. But I can tell you, TC, that when I went to T-Mobile for the viewing party for Game 4, and that was when we lost that game, the series, basically, we knew that it was over. Mm-hmm. And walking out of that game with my buddy, I turned to him and I said, you know what? This is the most depressed I've been that I can remember for a very long time about a sporting event, because I bought into this team. And, you know, the combination of everything, you know, it started with the hashtag Vegas Born. Then it became hashtag Vegas Strong. Last night I sent out a tweet saying, you know, thank you for the season, and I made it hashtag Vegas Proud, because that, you know, I'm proud of what this team accomplished. And, you know, my wife is a Las Vegas native, never had a sports team, not really big into sports. If I tell you how much money I had to spend on merchandise this year with her, she bought, you know, full into it, and that's what this town needed at the time.
Being a sports fan is very difficult. One team wins, their fan base is ecstatic. Pittsburgh's been very good. Their organizations, and the Steelers and the Penguins have been very good. But look at the Capitals. They have had playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment for all these years. Their fans have stuck with them for 43 years.
It was in existence, right?
And they had a great showing here yesterday. I talked to a lot of their fans, and you know, they were proud that they were able to get over the hump. This was the first time they had ever won a Stanley Cup game.
I know.
In these finals, because they got swept the other time they were there. So it's not easy to get behind these guys. And you do, and you stay with them. And, you know, your true fans will stay with you. And the Knights got to the Stanley Cup in their first year. That is just ridiculously unheard of. This league is very, very difficult, full of unbelievable talent. And for doing what they've done, I couldn't be more proud of where. And today I actually got up. And I said, you know what, I'm going to night up again. And I put on my night shirt. I said, you know what, this is the beginning. Right. This was sad that the season ended, and I was, like I said, I was very disappointed that this ride ended. But this is going to be something we're going to be talking about, you know, when we're retired, because it was really special.
It sounds like we are going to have a parade still. Sounds like they're still talking about having a parade.
You know, I asked somebody today, next I said, week? I sure hope something happens, because I'd love to be a part of that. You know, I'd love to just go see it and just stand and observe and kind of tip your hat to the organization.
Guys, let's talk about this series, because when we sat here heading into game one, and then after game one, the resounding Knights victory in game number one, and then they lost game number two, and it was like they still played okay, and you left here tied 1-1. What turned it around for the Capitals starting either in Game 2 or when they went back to D.C. in Game 3?
I think what happened is the Knights had lots of opportunities and kind of missed them. We missed some great – Tuck had a beautiful shot that Holtby stopped with a miraculous save in Game 2, which probably would have forced overtime and maybe put a little clamp on them. Our mistakes that some of our players made, which is a team sport, they make mistakes, ended up in the back of our net. They made us pay each and every time we made mistakes, and that was really the difference. Last night, I thought the Knights played a very good game, and then in the third period, it kind of got away with a couple of a quick pass when the guy made a good keep at the blue line, and a nice shot by Smith-Pelly, and then, you know, Fleury thought he had it, and it was a giveaway from Rice Pisa a couple of times. But those things happen in hockey. Fleury had been there all year to stop us. And when we made mistakes, be able to be there. You know, he wasn't great in the finals, but you know what? He was great all year. So these things happen. Hockey is such a game of inches. We could have been well ahead in game four early on in that game, and they just didn't score. And when they had the opportunities, they did.
Marco, what do you think about the home ice advantage? Once Washington won game two here, and they went back for games three and four. Traditionally, they haven't been that good at home, especially during this postseason. But then there was just a feeling back there when they went back there tied at one that it was their series. That's what they believed. And lo and behold, that's what it turned out to be.
It did. In hockey, for whatever reason, the home ice seems to have the least amount of value of any of the major sports. But, you know, let's go back to game four. Those first 6.5 minutes, we could have very easily have been up 2-0 or 3-0 on the way. What we experienced in this series was, you know, Fleury wasn't exceptional. A couple of the goals that got by him were plays that nobody could have stopped. I mean, they were just breakaways. Guys had wide open shots. But what he didn't get in this series that he did get in the other series, there were a lot of rebounds. He made saves, but there were rebounds. The defensemen weren't there to bail him out and clear the puck, and they were getting them in on the second shots. And then on the flip side, we got a dose of what everybody else in the playoffs experienced against Fleury. Holpe, except for game one, he stood on his ear in this series. And you go back to the last two games in the Tampa Bay series, guy hadn't had a shutout all year, and he tosses back-to-back shutouts in game 6 and 7 when you're down 3-2. And, you know, I know Ovechkin got the, you know, the MVP, mm-hmm. and, you know, he deserved it, you know, for lifelong work. But Holpe was the key to this team and the stops that he made. But just as a true fan, a sports fan, heartbroken that we didn't win, but you had to have some joy looking at the face of Ovechkin when he's going around the rink holding that cup. I mean, it was like he looked like a kid, you know, and here's a grown man that's played in the league for how long, and that's how much these guys love this sport. And, you know, the Stanley Cup presentation is the best of any of the sports by far.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you said about Holpe. He didn't even start the playoffs.
I know.
I mean, he was on the bench. He yeah. came in relief in, the middle of game two, mm-hmm. and when they fell behind. You know, hats off to the Capitals. They were resilient. They bounced back during the year to win their division, and then they were down 0-2 and had to go to double overtime in game three against Columbus and pulled that series off. They beat the best team in hockey in the last 2 years, and that's the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then they came back from 3-2 and shut them out. I actually waited. The only person I wanted to wait to carry the puck or the cup was Holtby, because he kind of personifies that team of resilience. And when he had the opportunity to get back in there, he was going to shine. He had a bad game in game one, let five in, and of course got the empty netter at the end. But he was very, very good. And, you know, they in a series, the better team's going to win, and the Capitals were better in this series.
What do you think went wrong for the Knights? Because they looked like a totally different team, especially in those last three games, say even four games, compared to what we saw during the course of the regular season and the first three rounds of the playoffs. I don't know about you, but my thoughts were they just did not look to be the same team. What was the reason for that?
I personally don't think they looked that bad. I think that the Capitals played well. Okay. I think the Capitals played well. I think people vastly underestimated the Capitals' speed, and they got on top of us, and they made it very difficult for us to have a transition game outside of our zone. And it's really a matter of a couple inches. Holpe was very good. Some of our opportunities, goodness, like you said in game four, a puck off the post, and then James Neal had a golden opportunity and missed it. Those things do happen. Maybe we got a little tight, but I think I'm not going to say what went wrong for us. I'd have to say the Capitals played well, and they played well enough to win. And when we did make mistakes, the puck ended up in the back of the net, and that is very, very difficult, because when you play as well as the Knights did to start game four, and then all of a sudden you're down two goals and then a third goal, it's hard to get back up for it, and they're very good.
You go back to looking at the style of this series. I thought Washington would be a better matchup for us because it's our style of hockey, a little more wide open. But think about it, the last couple series that we played, the Knights had to play a totally different style, and they were able to adjust and play a more physical, defensive-type hockey that wasn't their style during the course of the season. They wanted that wide open, and then they went back to it, and like you said, I didn't realize Washington was as fast as they were. The only time I watched Washington close this year was the Penguin series, obviously, for me. And they gave us a dose of our own medicine, and I don't know if, you know, our guys, this was a long season, and these were guys that, you know, weren't star players on the teams that they came from. They haven't been this deep before, you know, most of them, and, you know, maybe Washington just had a little bit, they wanted it, I don't want to say they wanted it more, but they did deserve it. Definitely was the best team.
Marco D'Angelo of WagerTalk.com joined us. Brian Benowitz here at the Cosmopolitan. T.C. Martin, we're here inside the CG Technology Sportsbook.
T.C., is that a Winnipeg Jets jersey over there? A Wheeler jersey right
over
there?
I think it is.
There?
Wheeler's in the house.
Unbelievable.
Well, he's on vacation right now.
Gotta love these hockey guys supporting their teams.
Did he come with Jerry the Dentist?
He might have.
Jerry the Dentist is in the house.
Ready to go.
Wait, look at this guy.
I got two Winnipeg jerseys he's taken back to get some new names on them.
Look at that.
So I get Trubin Morrissey on my old jerseys.
Well, you know the next Canadian jersey that you have to bust out here pretty soon, don't you?
I do. I'm ready for that Saskatchewan Rough Riders one. It's coming up soon. I think the CFL starts in like an hour, so we've got to be ready for it.
Exactly. All right. So I want to talk about something that was very disturbing to me last night, and I think it should be to any Golden Knights fan. There was way too much red in that building last night. Huh. And I'm talking way too much red. I don't want to over-exaggerate and say that it was close to a quarter of the building, but it was a lot of red last night, a lot of Caps fans. It was nothing like we've seen at any point during the postseason. Games 1 and 2, you could barely find a Caps jersey. But game number 5, all of a sudden you have these guys that are there. And the reason they're there is because Vegas Golden Knight fans sold their tickets to Cap fans. Guys, I cannot recall any other sport, any other series, championship game where I have seen that. And you may think I'm a little crazy here, but again, I go back here. I was here in the 90s, you know, UNLV in their heyday, and other sports were here with the Thunder, the Aces, and the Canadian Football League, and the Posse, and this and that. And Vegas got a bad rap as a sports town, saying these fans will not support it, especially if they lose. What I saw last night took me back to that. Like, what's going to happen 3, 4, 5 years down the road if the Golden Knights are one of those teams that are hovering around 30 or 40 points in a season, or 25 or 30 wins? More of what we saw last night. But how can that happen in Game 5 of a Stanley Cup final for that to happen?
If they would have came back 2-2, it doesn't happen.
Right.
It doesn't happen. But it was 3-1 in...
Still no excuse.
It's no excuse.
It's not happening in Cleveland tonight. You're going to see a bunch of Warrior fans there, and they're down 3-0, and they knew they had no shot from the beginning.
The only difference, the caveat there with Cleveland is that's LeBron James's last game in a Cavaliers uniform.
I'm going to ask Brian and Jerry the Dentist, would that happen in Winnipeg?
It would not happen in Winnipeg.
Well, nobody could probably get there either.
It's hard to get there, first of all. And there was probably because I went.
You found your way, Magnum.
I went up to Winnipeg in
three
February.
Connection flights, but
February there's maybe 20 Knights fans, right. and there's maybe 80 or 100 there for the clinching game in Game 5 that I was luckily enough to attend. It was a shocking amount of Caps fans there. I'd say probably around 4,000, if I was guessing. I counted them. I didn't count them all. But it seemed like they felt it was their time to come win the cup. And they had their fans showed up in droves. And StubHub and the ability to sell tickets fairly easily, people just cashed them out. They maybe thought, well, maybe we can get to Game 7 and they'll go again. It felt a little bit more like the regular season.
Right.
You know, when there were so many opposing fans. And hockey fans do travel, and this is a great warm weather place for them to come to, especially throughout the winter. It's been a very hospitable. People know to T-Mobile is a place where they don't feel threatened to go into, and that's great because we want them to be like that in Las Vegas. But there was a little too many Caps fans for my liking, but, you know, what are you going to do?
You're a season ticket holder. Yeah. You took the vow. You know many other people took the vow. So talk about that element and represent those people who shouldn't be selling their tickets to the opponent.
Well, I would not sell the experience for anything.
Right.
You know,
but you had people sitting next to you right?
I would blow the money at StubHub on the tomorrow at Santa Anita. So
but
I would
you were sitting next to Cap fans you
know,
last night.
Yeah, you know, it, the guys next to me I've not met yet, and that's aggravating.
Wow.
The guys in seat 1 and 2 in
think
my row.
Think about that.
And they've not shown up yet. They've sold them. So I've sat next to a lot of opposing fans and talked to them a little bit about what they're all about. And most have been very kind and very good. They're not, you know, inexpensive tickets. But I would rather because the guys on my right, we've created a great friendship, and I got people behind me, and all in our section, we take a lot of pride in the 225.
Right.
You know, it's very important. It's what we do, and to see that this, there's always a revolving door in some of these seats is a little frustrating. So hopefully there's ways to take care of that, and you get more of the passionate fans, because people were locked out this year. You know, there's a wait list for right. season tickets now, and you'd rather have the people that really want to go and support the team there as opposed to people trying to make a buck.
You know, TC, this is a town that, you know, we always talk about plus EV, you know, when we're betting and looking for. The fact is a lot of people bought season tickets that didn't, at the beginning, weren't locked into this team. They did it strictly as an investment. And when it got down to the last game, the prices that the Washington fans would pay is going to pay a good portion of their season ticket price for next year, you know, and that's part of it. But I know a lot of people that, you know, had season tickets and took the vow and everything. At the beginning of the year, they were selling their tickets, but they fell in love with this team, and they weren't selling the tickets afterwards because they wanted to be part of the experience.
What are you guys' thoughts about the future of this franchise? How many of these players are maybe coming back, may not be coming back? Because I think a lot of people don't realize that maybe a lot of these guys aren't locked up for long term. I mean, this was a hodgepodge, right, so to speak, you know, with guys coming in here. And everything worked out well. The trading deadline came, and there was a lot of people who said, well, let's don't do anything. Let's just keep everything as is. And they brought in a couple pieces to the puzzle. This is an era where we see transition in every professional sport, where rosters never stay the same. And again, for a lot of first-time fans, they might not be used to this, but this roster will not be the same next year.
Yeah, it most certainly will not. And some of it is there's some really, really good talent in the minor leagues that need, that deserve an opportunity to step up. I believe Cody Glass led the league that he was in scoring. I think Nick Hague led the league in defensemen. They got this guy White Cloud that's ready to go. I mean, so there's some players that you want to make sure you have room for. Then it's all about the math. I mean, there's a cap and, you know, where they are in their career and what you're going to spend versus the other guys coming in. And you just got to have faith in the organization. How can you not have faith in this organization with what George McPhee did? Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch and I'm going to look and I'm going to be cheerful. And whoever they select and whoever's on the roster come October, that's who I'm going to cheer for. You know, it's more than just the player that's in there who you love. But, you know, it's a business. And where they are in their career and how much money you're going to spend and the life of them, it just, you know, to me, the only one that is completely untouchable is Fleury. Fleury seems to have identified with the place. He's got probably three, maybe four good years left in him. And he is the reason why we were playing in June.
And it's not easy to find a quality keeper. So
We've never had that situation in an expansion draft where there were two, you know, the Penguins were in a situation with two goalies and it became math. And Fleury has come out and said that, you know, he didn't know where his career was going to be at the end of last year. He said, you know, he started second guessing, is this the end for me? And coming here was a rebirth for him. And he played at a level that I can tell you from watching him in Pittsburgh, he played as good as he's ever played in his entire career this year with the Knights. And he's gone on record and said he wants to finish his career here. And he's the face. I mean, will he have this kind of year next year? You know, most of those guys, will they? Because they all played with a chip on their shoulder. Let's face it, you had that whole, you know, the golden misfits and everything. They bought into it. And will they have that same intensity? Probably not. But at least they've had the experience and they know they can do it. And you talked about McPhee. Remember, those two teams you were watching last night, he was the, you know,
the
guy that, of both of those teams. What a, you know, testament to him is a great hockey mind.
Yeah, I don't know enough about all these players and where things are. I'm just going to trust the organization to do the right thing.
And why not trust a guy who's going to be the general manager of the year and probably Gerard Gallant, the coach of the year,
absolutely,
when these awards come out here in a week and a half?
And let's go back to the beginning of the year. Who was supposed to be the superstar on this team? Shipachov.
Right.
He's the big signer out of the KHL.
Right.
Guess what? He wasn't fitting in, and guess where he is? Wow. Out of the league. I thought that was a great point for them to say, hey, there was nobody arguing about ice time. They shared the puck. They did things. They believed in rolling four lines, and I think they'll be just fine next year.
All right, Marco D'Angelo and Brian Benowitz in the house here at the Cosmopolitan talking VGK. When we come back, we're going to break down the Belmont Stakes. We've got two great horse racing experts here, two gurus. We'll talk about Justify's chances of being a Triple Crown winner. find some exotics, all that kind of good stuff coming up. And also NBA Finals game number 4 tonight coming up between Cleveland and Golden State. We'll touch upon that as well too. T.C. Martin, broadcasting live from the Cosmopolitan, Fox Sports Radio. Glad to have you with us, Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. No better place to be. Fantastic sports book. We've got the pool tables. We got the fabulous bar area here. We got games going on. Blackjack right here. And the great HD TVs here at the Cosmopolitan CG Technology Sportsbook. Brian Benowitz and Marco D'Angelo join us here today from WagerTalk.com. Talk the Knights in the first segment. Now we turn our attention to the Belmont Stakes. Triple Crown on the horizon again. We will see tomorrow 10 horses in the field. Justify the favorite coming out of the one hole. So, guys, let's start with it. Justify going for the Triple Crown. What do you think?
Well, you look at coming into the Belmont out of the Preakness. Some people are trying to poke holes into Justify. And if you look at it, that race in the Preakness, he was challenged the entire race. He didn't go the suicide fractions that they went in the Kentucky Derby, but the difference was in the Kentucky Derby, the horse that was going with him on the suicide fractions, when that horse stopped, he stopped hard and he started doing the backstroke in that race. Good Magic never quit in that race. And even though they weren't going the fractions, you have two horses going at each other head to head like that, it takes a lot out of a horse. He put Good Magic away, who raced gamely and only got beat, you know, 3/4 of a length. He was in that blanket finish of the four horses. But most of the time, the horse that would be flying on the outside late would end up catching the horse on the front. And Justify did not let Bravazo go by. And, you know, if he gets a clean trip, which he should on the front end, I think he's going to inherit this lead in this race. I don't know how you see it. I don't think anybody wants to go with him. But there is one intriguing element in this race, and it's Noble Windy, if he decides to go with him. And Fletcher's got two horses, and I see your thoughts on it, Brian. He's got a closer in this race, and he's got a front runner. Does he use one as a rabbit?
You know, I actually have obviously handicapped the race. There's nobody that can go with Justify unless they waste Noble Windy. Noble Windy's the only one that's flashed any kind of speed that's remotely as quick as Justify. He does start with the 9, so he's got a clear path out there. Justifies down in on the rail, which I guess in the Belmont historically isn't that big a deal, but you don't want to be on the rail if you're a speed horse. You want to be a little more clear outside. I think Justify, and he's got the you know, the world-class jockey and Mike Smith on him, may let Noble Indy go and sit behind him like he did in the the Santa Anita Derby, or the second race of the year when he was in the optional claimers, where he just sat behind the horse and let that horse run off in the suicide fractions and then just sit behind him and say, you know what, I can run second or third with this horse and then I could pounce him. So I actually think Pletcher's going to try to do that. I think he's going to try to send Noble Indy, and I don't think Mike Smith's going to take the bait. I think he's going to sit behind him in second, maybe third even, and be ready to go and have plenty of horse in the stretch.
Marco, you mentioned the Preakness, where Good Magic gave Justify all he could handle. It was almost like a match race. Good Magic not coming back for the Belmont. Was there talk for Good Magic to actually try again, or talk to us about that?
I don't think so. After, you know, the way they used him in that race, why would you come back and race the mile and a half, freshen him up, and avoid Justify? I mean, when you're a horse owner, if there's a horse you can't beat, you know, there's a big difference between first-place money and second-place money. You're going to go find a spot where you can get the horse in and take that first-place money.
He came off of two very good races. And what does it do to put him in the Belmont? Get him a little fresher, get him ready for the summer and the fall. There's tons of good races out there.
Mentioned a mile and a half, the longest race of the Triple Crown. Is distance a factor for Justify?
No. Not at all. I don't think the distance, in fact, this is an easier race than the mile and a quarter, because the way the track is set up. Right. And in fact, you know, everybody is very, very, very high that I keep hearing on Hofberg. And because he got in a ton of trouble, and he did, and he ran a very good race in the Derby, but horses that don't have early speed get in trouble. And this will probably be another one of those races. He's going to be behind. He's going to make a move. And will he have enough to get there? Probably not, because, you know, the Belmont, you've got to be very close. They just do not come out of the clouds in the Belmont Stakes.
The Belmont, the one thing I will say about this race, this is the only track in the country that is configured the way it is. It is a full 1.5 mile circumference. even though, you know, they don't race that many races at that distance. They call it Big Sandy because of the surface. This is a track surface that some people say can tire a horse. But the biggest thing about the Belmont for me is this is the one race that the jockey, I feel, is the most important of the three races. And the reason being, when you head into that last turn, you're used to normal configurations of a racetrack. If you're a closer, you're starting your move at a certain spot. If you start that move at Belmont too early, that because of those big sweeping turns, how wide they are and how long they are that you're in the turn, when you come out of that and you're looking at the top of the stretch, the gas tank can be on empty. You've got to time it perfectly, and that's something that having experience over the track and the jockeys, the veteran jockeys that know how to ride here.
It's a great point. In Belmont, you'll see what they call is they'll hang in the stretch. It looks like they're going to loom up and pass, and they just have nothing left. And the horse that's on the lead that's got the quick straightaway is ready to go. So they hang a little bit in the stretch, and they just kind of drift wide, and they can't quite get there.
We've had sloppy tracks for the Derby and the Preakness. There was talk a couple days ago that we would have rain again in the forecast for the Belmont. What's the latest with that? And if there is, it seems like it's not going to bother Justify anyway, right?
Yeah, I just looked at the Weather Channel before we went on the air, and now they're showing partly cloudy. So they went from 70% chance earlier in the week to 40% to now maybe we're going to get a dry track. And I would love to see it. I mean, just not only – I want the horses to have their best shot. We know that they've all raced on it. But you know what? It's not fun for the fans either, because there's going to be 100,000 people at Belmont, and they're going to be cheering. Let them have a dry experience for a change.
Absolutely. They're looking to what maybe they're your – is it the first undefeated Triple Crown winner possibly? Is that true?
Possibly. If there might have been one other one, okay. But this is definitely only one.
This is could potentially history. Okay. And so there's going to be 100,000, including my son Jake will be there. So he's excited to be at the race. But it's going to be you want them to have the experience. You want them to feel the thing. You want them to be outside and enjoy themselves. And for somebody who likes to handicap the races, the off track is just it's just not as good. Horses don't run to it. You want it to be a fair track.
As we head into the Belmont, this Triple Crown, is there any doubt that Justify does not win? Are there any real threats? Because there's handicappers out there who say, hey, can I find someone to pull the upset? Is there anybody here?
There is. And you started to talk about the horse Hofburg. This is the horse that is royally bred for this race. He's got top and bottom. You know, a lot of horses will have it on the sire side, but he's got it on the dam side too. You've got Curlin on the top, and you've got Touch Gold on the bottom with the mare. Touch Gold won this race. You know, this is a horse that's bred for distance. He did have a horrible trip in the Kentucky Derby. He's not going to have to navigate 20 horses in the Belmont, and he's going to have a mile and a half to do it. So traffic concerns are less in the Belmont than they are in the Derby, but he does need to be placed closer to the pace than he was in the Derby. And I think they will do that. You've got an old school trainer here. I love Bill Mott. You know, this is a guy, he puts his horses in the right spot. He does it the old fashioned way. And, you know, you can't argue with his results. If this is a horse that only had four lifetime starts, he has a license. We don't know where the ceiling is on this horse. What impressed me the most, and Brian, you know, with a green horse, as many times as he got stopped in the Derby, got smacked coming out of the gate, and two or three times the jockey had to grab the reins and steady him because he ran into trouble when he was trying to make a move. Veteran horses will stop and not respond once they get stopped like that. This was a horse that's green with four lifetime starts that kept going. I think he's got a license to improve.
Yeah, Hofburg is the horse everybody's pointing at. I think since the Derby, I've had 15 people come up to me and go, oh, did you see that trip for Hofburg? I go, yeah, you got your typical closing trip at the Derby. They get shut out. He ran an exceptional race. Does that mean he's going to run back to that race in this one just because it's longer that he'll get there? I don't think so. The horse has no speed. He needs to be closer. Ortiz needs to keep him closer. If he's not closer in this race, he's just going to run against some fresh horses at the front, and he's going to finish mid-pack.
All right, guys, let's get to your predictions, what you're going to bet, what you think is going to happen, and possible exotic wagers here where we may be able to find some big money here. Marco, let's start with you.
Well, obviously, I'm going to have Justify on my ticket. I'm not going to let him run me over. I'm going to have Hofburg. The horse that intrigues me coming out of the Preakness is tenfold. Mm-hmm. This is a horse, another one, with only four lifetime starts, and he's improved in every start. If you like buyer speed figures, he's gone 87, 90, 92, and 95. Mm-hmm. It's the arrow's pointing straight up on this horse. He's going to be a horse that I'm going to be using as a long shot in there on my exotics. And you know, if he gets the right trip, who knows?
Have you seen, is there current odds out on the race?
I have not seen updated odds.
I was rather shocked that horse was 12-1 morning line. I thought he ran a really brilliant Preakness and ran every bit as well as Bravazo. Personally, I think it's going to run exact order as it did in the Preakness. It's going to run Justify, Bravazo, and Tenfold, and it's going to maybe be close for a little while with Justify pulling away. To me, I think the value might be this horse on the outside, Blended Citizen. And the main reason for that is he's got a nice win over the surface. As we've said, Belmont is a difficult surface to navigate. He ran in the Peter Pan against less quality horses, and that's important. And there was only six horses in the race, but he ran a very nice race in a very nice time on a good track. He might be somebody that's on the improve as well.
Guys, before we leave this topic and get ready for the Belmont tomorrow, Secretariat 73, Seattle Slough 77, Affirm 78, and then we don't come to American Pharoah in 2015, right? Could we see this trend start to repeat itself with, here we come with, you know, with Justify again? Or what is the current state of horse racing as far as breeding and training and success for Triple Crown winners?
Well, every crop of the newborn horses are different. And it, sometimes it takes a while for a horse to get to the track. I mean, who was the horse last year? I can't remember his name.
It says it all right there.
But so he ended up winning $17 million, and he never ran in the Triple Crown races. Yeah. So, you know, these are things that you just never know where they're going to be ready. I think that there's trainers like Pletcher, trainers like Baffert, who have it dialed in for these young horses, and they also have the right owners to go get them the horses that can be there. So will it happen? I mean, there was probably 10, 12 times that there was a possibility to win the Triple Crown that didn't. It's very hard to do. I think it's going to happen again tomorrow. But will it happen again next year? I can't say. I don't know what these two-year-olds look like.
I think one of the things that we're seeing changing is as we're talking about these horses into Belmont, how many times we said this horse only has four starts, this one only has five. They're changing the way they're bringing the horses to the races. Before, you had to have three or four starts as a two-year-old, and then you had your three prep races coming into the Derby. We're not seeing that anymore, and that maybe is helping these horses get through the three races in 5 weeks and Justify, obviously, the first horse since Apollo to win without racing it too.
All right, we come back. We'll touch on the NBA Finals tonight. Golden State trying to close it out just the way the Capitals did last night. Could the NHL Stanley Cup be done one night, the NBA Finals the next? Back-to-back celebrations, we'll see. I think a lot of people in Oakland think that's going to be the case. We'll preview that when we come back. TC Martin Show, live from the Cosmopolitan on Fox. Get on over here to the Cosmopolitan and get the CG Technology mobile app. It is so easy to do. Bet where you watch the games, here in the book, restaurant, anywhere, poolside. Get the mobile app. So easy to do. So get on over here to the Cosmopolitan, your friendly ticket writers here. You got a great staff here. You know that? Here, everywhere.
Great staff. I see Shane over there. He's looking real good, ready to go. Yeah. Ready to take anybody?
Got to have the mobile app. Got to have it.
Chris Beard's here somewhere running around, making sure everybody's all taken care of.
You know what Chris Beard's doing? He's sitting there taking notes. See him in the back, he's taking notes of what we're saying again. He does it every week, you know?
That's right.
There he goes.
That's right. He's ready to retire, I think.
Marco D'Angelo from WagerTalk.com is here. Brian Benowitz. NBA Finals tonight. Golden State Warriors trying to close it out. They're a 4.5-point choice, total 216. Do the Warriors get it done, Marco?
For all intents and purposes, I do think so. That Cleveland knows this series is over. I don't think they want to go back across country and lose game five in Oakland. But it is the last game, I firmly believe, last game we're going to see LeBron James in Cleveland in a Cavaliers uniform. With that said, I play the game tonight. I'm looking at over in the total because, you know, unlike game two, back in Oakland, whenever they were losing, you know, in the fourth quarter and it was out of reach, they took the bench out. Mm. You know, they were done. They were saving them. They're not going to pull LeBron in a game that it might be his last game. And I think you're going to get what you see towards the end of the regular season, a lot of offense, no defense. If the game gets out of hand, it'll just be going back and forth and hoisting them up. And we know that both teams can score pretty quickly.
And you just wonder from a Golden State standpoint, who is it going to be tonight? It was Kevin Durant with 43 points in game number three. Seven other Warriors scored between 8 and 11 points. And in as bad as a shooting night that Steph Curry had and Klay Thompson had, those guys were still key parts, especially Curry. You know, he didn't score much, but he still was taking defenders away from Durant. He had, five rebounds, six assists, or eight assists, I think it was. So, you know, he put himself in that position to still be an active part of the game. And I think a lot of fans say, oh, wow, Curry, you know, 3 for 16. How can he be MVP or whatever? Well, very easily, because his presence on the floor just causes havoc. And I cannot expect Curry or Thompson to have bad shooting games again tonight. I fully anticipate the Warriors to take care of business tonight. And who's it going to be tonight? You know, is it going to be Andre Iguodala possibly, you know?
You know, that's the beauty of having three different, you know, scorers, prolific scorers. Mm-hmm. You've got options, and they can change every night. That's why, you know, people talked at the beginning of this series, could you make LeBron James an MVP on a losing team? We never see that, but clearly, he is the most valuable player on the floor to his team.
Yeah.
That team does nothing without him. I mean, I heard in Cleveland in the grocery stores, they have Kyle Korver on the milk cartons trying. He's missing in his finals. 5 points. They can't find him.
I was going to say, you've been shopping in Cleveland or Akron? Or where have you been?
He's been a non-factor. I mean, this is one of the most prolific three-pointer shooters in the history of the NBA, and he can't get anything done.
Yeah, and he was a great shooter in Philly. I mean, he was a key component in Philly on some bad teams. But, no, and Kevin Love's another guy, too. What are you exactly going to get out of Kevin Love? You have no idea, game in and game out.
You don't. You know, and he did perform in game three, but it wasn't enough. And you look at how hard they played in that game. I know the one thing that cashed for everybody, and I know you guys are well aware of it here at the book, was those 0-2 teams in the NBA returning home, just betting those first halves have been absolutely gold, and you guys keep moving the numbers on them and whittling it down, like, you know, what the game number is and then what you guys are putting out for the first half. You keep changing it, but it's still getting home.
Well, Brian, good news for you, my friend. We don't have to talk basketball after tonight anymore.
You know, I was going to try to contribute to this conversation, but I have not watched 1 second of the NBA this year, so it makes it very difficult.
You didn't need to say that. You didn't need to admit it.
I was listening to it, and I'm like, wow, you guys really
played it off.
You guys know a lot about this basketball, which is nice, but I'm ready for them to drop the pucks again. Let's go.
You're ready for some UCLA college basketball. You're ready for some hoops and hops here.
Hoops and hops. That's right. In March, make your reservation. Be ready to go.
Hey, this has been fantastic during the hockey season, being here, of course, and we look forward to being here during the course of the football season, basketball, starting all up again for our Friday showcase here. So yeah,
absolutely. It's a thrill to have you here, and it's great at the Cosmopolitan here, especially when it's football season. When football season's getting ready to go, we'll kick this sucker back up again. We'll have a lot of fun.
You got it. Brian, appreciate it. Marco, thanks for hanging with us again today, and great advice on the horses and the hockey.
No problem, TC, all anytime.
Right. Thanks to Jerry the Dentist. Everyone back in Canada. Big shout out to you all. If you missed any part of the show, go to the website, tcmartinshow.com. Thanks to Magnum back in the studio, Jazzy Jeff here. Have yourself a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday, 3 p.m., Fox Sports Radio.